Hello, shalom, and welcome to Nourish Your Biblical Roots. I'm Yael Eckstein, President and CEO of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, and we're broadcasting live from Dallas at the NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. And during our time here, we'll be talking with special guests on a variety of topics, especially as they relate to Israel and the work of the fellowship. So today, I am so honored to welcome to the podcast political commentator, talk show host, and friend of Israel who doesn't need much of an introduction.
You're kind.
Ben Ferguson. Woo!
Thank you. This is like coming back to my roots here. So I started in Christian radio when I was 12. And so I came to NRBs when I was like 13, 14, 15. So it's fun to be back here, kind of where for me it all started.
Yeah, child labor is awesome.
Yeah, right? I know, right? Exactly. They paid me in pizza and minimum wage. True story. I think the pizza was a trade, so they got a really good deal early on for me.
And you were built up in this... In this whole, it's really, I'm trying to find the word for it. It's like, it's a vibe.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And then, well, the last time I just texted a friend, so you know, a friend, a very good friend of Israel, Jay Sekulow.
Of course.
His son, Jordan, he was in my wedding. I was in his. We were worked together on the Bush campaign in 04. So I just texted him like, are you at the NRB? Because the last time we were here hosting Jay Sekulow live 15, 18 years ago.
Okay.
Small world.
So let's start there. What were your thoughts at the NRB when you were 12 years old?
So I remember just thinking, this is what I want to do with my life.
Wow.
I knew I wanted to do radio. I looked at it as my mission field. I knew that that was something, when I was 12, I knew this is what I was going to do. I also knew that I wanted to be a kid. I played tennis in college. I wanted to do that. But when you know that you're not good enough to go pro, you go to what's next. And for me, this was what I was always going to do. So when I came here, I just saw and I saw other people doing it. And I'm like, I want to do what they're doing. I want to make a difference in this country. And radio, when you're young, when you're 12, is a great place to hide because people will judge you based on what you're saying, not based on what you look like.
Yeah.
When you're young, there's a lot of people like, shut up. Like, you're young. You don't need to have an opinion. Go play outside. And radio was a place where people would listen to the words you were saying instead of judging what you looked like or your age. And that was probably the biggest blessing in radio and why I fell in love with it.
I love that. It's like the greatest equalizer.
Yeah. They say you have the looks for radio, you know? Like, well, I had really the looks for radio when I was 12, so.
That's amazing. And now you're sitting here and you have many 12-year-olds who are looking at you and saying, I want to be like Ben Ferguson when I grow up.
I hope I inspire people to be able to say, I don't have to wait till I'm 30 or 40 or 50 to get involved in the process, to stand up for what I believe in. I think that's one of the things that we just witnessed in this last election here in the U.S. is you saw a lot of people that finally just said, I'm not waiting for my turn. And I'm going to get involved and I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to stand up for what I want for this country. And I feel like these people in Washington are not representing me. They're stacking debt against me. They're destroying my kids' futures in our schools. And so there's a lot of issues that I think have brought in a lot of younger people. And that's one of the blessings of radio and podcasts and just how I think social media has changed. Social media, there are a lot of negatives. I think two of the biggest positives has been one, it gives people a place to have a platform to say what they believe in a lot earlier on, and it's not intimidating. And two, I also think it has become a great place and a blessing for special causes. You look at the IFCJ and the ability to get out the word on social media to others and connect and find people and make it feel personal and see the impact you're having, seeing the videos that are coming out of Israel. I think that is one of the biggest blessings of social media. There's always good and bad with it, but those are some of the big positives.
I relate to that so much that we don't need to rely on mainstream media to tell our story.
You can go around them. You don't have to wait 6 months until they say, well, we need an anniversary. I mean, the media used to look at things as like anniversary.
Yeah.
Hey, we love your story. Tell us a date when it makes sense around something that happened. When your story doesn't need to wait. And now you can get that story out there each and every day.
And the story is cumulative. That's what I see you
100%.
Doing and that I always see you doing is you deal with what's happening now, but you put it in the context of something that's much bigger.
Yeah.
And so you give a voice to that silenced majority. So many Americans felt like they didn't have a voice. They didn't have a representation. And yet they felt passionately on different issues. And you've been that voice.
Well, example of that that just comes to my head is you look at all the anti-Semitism that exploded on college campuses last year. There was two things about that moment that I think we learned a lot from. Number one, follow the money. That was not organic on college campuses. It was paid for. It was paid agitators. It was people making money and profiting off of this. And then two, the propaganda that came from it with the media and undermining that, saying, this is, you guys are selling something the majority of Americans do not agree with. There was zero accountability. We saw that the presidents of the universities that went before Congress and were just defiant and their anti-Semitism. It cost some of them their jobs, as I believe it should have. Yeah. But the way they treated Jewish students, no one would have seen that if it wasn't for social media.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for conservative talk radio telling their stories and people on podcasts and others that were saying, we're going to get your back. These campuses abandoned Jewish students. They literally sent them emails saying, you're not safe. Not we're going to keep you safe. Not we're going to help you. It's basically like, you're kind of not welcome here because you're Jewish. And I think there were massive repercussions you're now witnessing. Funding that has changed. Major donors are now asking questions. And I think there's, look, there's always good that comes out of the bad. And I do think there's going to be a major correction now to stand with the students from Israel and to stand with people that support Israel and not allow them to be treated that way for decades to come.
Oh, may God hear your words.
I hope I'm right.
And answer our prayers, because it's a big shift in what we've seen. And I think we all hope and feel that reality coming.
Well, and it also got elected officials on the record.
Yes.
You either stand with us or you don't. Like you're either one of us or you're not. Here's the line in the sand, and you better pick a side. And there's none of this gray area now where you can just jump, but depending on the politics of the day. We know who our allies are. And we know who those that I believe are truly anti-Semitic are. And now at least I always want to know who I'm up against. I want to know who's fighting against me. And I think watching what happened on our college campuses and watching the response in Washington, D.C., I now know who's pro-Israel and I now know who not to trust.
So Bennett says in the scriptures that at the end of days, good will be called evil. Evil will be called good. Light will be called dark. Dark will be called light. You're a Christian.
Yes.
What do you attribute to the fact that you see light as light, that you see good as good, that you do not have this broken moral compass that so many people do, and that so many Christians around the world are standing with truth, with justice, with everything that's good, standing together with God and God's values? Why do you think now this is happening?
Well, I think we're in a time of spiritual warfare, I think, in the world. I certainly think in the Middle East. And I think that you got to know what you believe in and why you believe in it. That's something I tell people. Know what you believe in, why you believe in it, and don't just regurgitate something you saw on TikTok. Because you got to know what you believe in, why, and be able to defend it. And when I go and talk on college campuses or I talk to high school students or leadership conferences, I always tell them, the best advice I ever got, funny enough, was from Rush Limbaugh. When I was 13, he said to me two things. Figure out how to sit in a room and talk to yourself for 3 hours a day with no phone calls, and then someone might listen to you. And you better know what you believe and why you believe it, because anybody can give you talking points. And so I took that to heart. I wish I could have spent more time with him, because for me, he was my idol icon of the industry. Without him doing it and being a trailblazer, I wouldn't be sitting here with you today. But I also remember thinking, okay, I really need to know what I believe before I open my mouth. And I think with my faith, that was also core of it. What do I believe? Why do I believe it? Why am I a Christian? Yes, I grew up in a Christian home, but there was a certain point where I realized I have to take ownership for that. My dad was a police officer. My mom was a school teacher. They were amazing teachers, but they were also about, you have to do this for you. This has to be a decision that you believe in. And I think we've had so much of this just kumbayaism that we've witnessed, where people are lost. They're 30, they're lost. They're 40, they don't know what they believe, why they believe it, where. And we got to get back to that, and we have to inspire people. Like, I love when people say, well, why do you stand with Israel? It's a great question. How many hours do you have? Do you want to know why I stand with them biblically? Do you want to know why I stand with them politically? Do you want to know why I stand with them in the Middle East? Do you want to know why I think that they're the last beacon of hope from a national security standpoint? There's so many different aspects of it. But being able to have those grand conversations is something we're missing, because now what we've reduced it to, and I try to tell people this, it's easy to go, and I remind myself of this when I go on TV. I can yell. I did Piers Morgan yesterday, and it can either be a yelling match, or hopefully I can educate someone on something they're wrong. And my goal now, as I've gotten older, I'm 43. I still feel young, like I'm 21, is I don't argue as much. I try to have a grand conversation. Have a grand conversation that people want to listen to instead of you're wrong, no, you're wrong, no, I don't like you. Like, I want people to feel compassion for Israel. I want people to have compassion for Holocaust survivors that have been attacked. I want them to have compassion for the parents that lost their kids. I want them to have compassion for those that were taken, the bodies that are now being returned, and understand the history, but also the here and now. And it's hard, it's complex issues, but we shouldn't shy away from them.
I think it's incredible. People don't realize some of the most basic facts, that Israel is tiny, the size of New Jersey.
It's so small.
Yeah, that we're 7.5 million Jews living in Israel, surrounded by 300 million Arabs, that there are 22 Arab states and the Arab Union and one Jewish state in the entire world. What do you think is the most misunderstood fact about Israel that you see specifically among the young ones?
I think that, well, two things. I think that the amount of genuine hatred in the Middle East for Israel, and if it wasn't for America and our relationship, there's a very good chance that someone would have annihilated Israel at this point. And from the river to the sea is real. And the chance of death to America and death to Israel and the big Satan and the little Satan are real. I don't think people understand what it's like to live a life where every single day you're having to look over your shoulder. You're having to live in a secure area that is, I describe it in a way that's, you walk outside, you don't have fear. You walk outside and you can be playing and it's become normal to run inside to a bomb shelter in your lifetime. That is something we take for granted, I think, our safety and security in this country specifically. And when you go through the process and you explain what it's like to be a Jewish person right now in the Middle East and looking at Hamas and Hezbollah and the money from Iran, it is complicated, but it's not if you take the time to explain it. And so I think that's one of the things we have to do a better job of, is explain, why is Hamas Hamas? Why is Hezbollah that? Where's the money coming from? Where's the influence coming from? Why is Iran involved? Why is this happening? Why is Assad in Syria? There's a lot of things that if you slow down and you take time, I think it makes people go, okay, now I understand this. And why do people hate people that are in, from Israel? And you got to go back and you got to talk about the history and you got to talk about World War II and you got to talk about Hitler. And these things should be talked about, and we've shied away from them for far too long. We've whitewashed the history of it, and we've tried to turn into, well, you know, they're pretty aggressive over there. Well, they're pretty, they come down heavy handed. I'm sorry, you shoot rockets at my house, I'm coming back heavy handed. You would too. And that's part of the conversation. You have to make it personal. If every 30 days I had to run inside my house and hide because I have a neighbor shooting in my backyard, or just randomly gunshots going off at my house, no one in America would put up with that. That is the real state that you live in Israel. And when you explain it on a personal level, I think it totally changes people's perspective on the siege and the amount of threats coming in.
I think that's such an important point, that it all goes back to, there are seven fronts right now,
yes,
that are fighting against Israel. They're all sponsored by Iran. And I always think about this, how protests for Hamas are illegal in Saudi Arabia, illegal in Egypt, illegal in Morocco, illegal in Jordan, and yet they are popping up everywhere in America and Europe. And the reason why they're illegal in so many of these Arab countries, it's not even because they care about Israel, it's because they're a threat to moderate Islam.
Yes.
Is that before 9/11, we were talking about 9/11. Before 9/11, there were terror attacks all across Saudi Arabia before they came and hit America. Islamic extremists is not just a threat to the West, it's a big threat to moderate Islam as well. And that's where we see the Abraham Accords come in. That you have these countries that understand the shared threat. And I hope and pray that through understanding the region, we'll be able to broaden that area of support and brotherhood as well.
Look, I tell people all the time, study, study, study. After 9/11 happened, one of the best things that anyone ever told me to do, they said, Ben, you need to understand the mindset of how this happened and how you could radicalize. And I'm embarrassed to say, but it also made me finish reading the Bible. I read the Quran cover to cover. From a research standpoint, if I want to know how something could be so powerful to then get someone to want to do this. And then I was like, I probably should learn the Bible a lot better than I do now. And I ended up reading the whole Bible in a year. And it goes back to, I want to understand what makes this happen. Because hopefully you want to live in harmony and you want things to get better. But there are some fundamental truths. There's just certain truths that are non-negotiable for me.
Survival.
Exactly. And I think when you learn more, then you realize, like, if I was living under those circumstances and I'm having to fight for my survival and there are people saying that I don't deserve to breathe, I would have a different worldview. And I think we take our security too much for granted here. By the way, look at our reaction after 9/11, I remind people. You think what just happened with Israel's reaction after what happened on the horrific attack, the worst attack since the Holocaust, do you know what we did after 9/11 when we felt like we were under siege? I stand with Israel, because that's exactly what I would hope would happen if someone came after me that way.
Wow. As you're talking, I'm thinking about how a few weeks ago, my 12-year-old daughter went to her first concert.
What was it? Because mine was definitely not as cool as hers, I promise.
It was an Israeli.
We're in NRB, I can say this. It was a true story. My parents took me to Sandy Patty and Michael W. Smith. So I said, well, at least there was nowhere to go up from there. And I saw Amy Grant one day on a plane. And I said, you know, my parents could at least start me with you. They went Sandy Patty. That's where we started. So I hope it was
mine
better.
Mine was Counting Crows.
Okay. Amazing. Well done. You're way cooler than I am right now.
So my daughter went to a concert. It was Omer Adam, the top Israeli artist. And she went to Tel Aviv. And in the middle of the concert, there was a ballistic missile fired by Yemen right where she was going.
Wow.
And so all their beepers started going off, the sirens. And the performer said, listen, there's no safe place here for 10,000 people in attendance. So let's just pray. And 10,000 people together got on their knees and prayed to God for protection. And I think as you're talking, and we're talking about all the threats, and we're talking about the threats against Israel, which represent these global threats about to anyone who cares about freedom, to America, not just the Saturday people, but the Sunday people, to Christians. What you said is very powerful. In order to understand this, you have to understand global politics, but you also have to read the Bible front to back. What's a message from the Bible that you get? Because what I get from reading the Bible is to love your neighbor like yourself, to look at the world and realize it's yours to fix, to look at the troubles and take responsibility in order to make them better, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked. And, you know, up until recently, I overlooked the verse that says, Ohave Hashem Sinura, lovers of the Lord despise evil. And that's a verse now, more and more, that I realize we love to look at the happy verses, and too often we overlook God saying there's going to be threats, and you have a responsibility not to love, but to recognize evil and to despise it.
Look, I think we're called as believers, and I say this, to not shy away from controversy. Our job is to stand up for what is right. Sometimes that can be very hard. Yeah. Sometimes that means, look, I wake up every day, and I've gotten used to it. I've almost become numb. Half the country hates me because either I'm a conservative or a Christian or both. There's a certain point where if someone's not attacking you, you're probably not doing enough for what you believe in. I think the Bible is very clear that our job is not just to be passive, but to be active. And our job is to stand with those that are in need, stand with those that are being harmed, stand with those that are being attacked, stand with those that are being persecuted. And if you look at the word persecuted in the Bible, I cannot think of a better word that goes with the Jewish people. God's people. And that's where I say, when people say, I want to shy away from this. I don't want to offend someone. I believe in the Bible. I didn't write it. I am willing to defend it. I'm willing to be proud of it. And I'm not going to be upset if I offend you. I can do it in a respectful, loving way, but there are certain moral absolutes and truths. I will always stand with the people of Israel. I will stand with God's people. It is non-negotiable. And I think we need to empower people to understand that. I go back to the college campuses because I always think when I'm talking about this country, about the future of it with young people. I was with Pam Bondi last week at CPAC, Senator Cruz and I, and we had her on our show. And we were talking about what is going to happen to these kids who are here on visas who become violent. They were not kicked out by the last administration because they were a part of that administration. They believed in it. They wanted it to happen. They wanted people to feel unsafe that were pro-Israel and or Jewish students. And what did she say? And what did the president say? They said, if you are in this country and you become violent and you do what you did, we are going to take your visa and we are going to kick you out of this country. It is not a right, it is a privilege that you are here. And when you act that way, you are gone. That is what true leadership looks like. And if that is controversial, then so be it.
Wow. Do you agree? Okay, we have lots of yeses and amens in the crowd here. What do you hope to see? What do you hope to see happen with the next generation of Americans?
I hope that this next generation of Americans learn to get involved much earlier on. I think what you're witnessing now with Elon Musk and Doge is connecting with so many young people that are realizing just how abusive our government is towards our tax dollars and how much of it is just being wasted and even used against us. I hope that wakens an entire generation. We're trillions of dollars in debt. We are bankrupt as a company, but we keep being able to print money. No one would invest in a company that had the balance sheet of the United States government right now and the spend rate of the United States government. So I hope that that brings in a younger generation. As for foreign policy, I hope that we understand and we get back to the core, which is America has important strategic allegiances with countries that are much more important than just, hey, we're allies. There's some that you're just an ally and it works. Canada is a great example of that. But there's others that are much deeper, much more important, and worth fighting, protecting, and defending. Israel is in a special place for me, and I think we've lost some of that. It used to be non-negotiable in our government, whether you're Republican side or Democratic side, yeah. There is now a clear split. I hope there are people that lose their jobs when they pick the side that is anti-Israel. I hope that there are people who say, I don't want a congressman who is staying there supporting Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran. I hope that we live in a country where we say, there's no way that Iran can get a nuclear weapon instead of sending billions of dollars in actual cash to Iran like the Obama administration did, like Joe Biden did. So I think we're at a flashpoint where there's more people seeking answers. I think that's a blessing that can come out of a horrific event. I think people are now learning why Israel is so important, why America and Israel are so important together and stronger together and both need one another. And I also hope that there's a certain level of compassion where people pray for the people in Israel because they're not the ones that they're the aggressors. I say that all the time when I'm on TV. Who started it? Who is the aggressor? Who is the one that's going in to kill? Who is the one that's defending themselves? Who is the one that's doing everything they can to protect themselves? There is a difference here. And it needs to be clearly distinguished. There is a difference. And as long as we have to remind people of that, then we're probably losing. We got to get to a point where it's very clear that everybody's like, look, they're defending themselves. One is attacking and one is defensive. And that's where we are.
Ben Ferguson, we are so grateful that you are such a strong voice in America, in the world, and we are so grateful for your very clear moral compass as you get through this world that is very confused, very dark. You continue to shine a light. So thank you for being exactly who you are, and thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
God bless.